Oh God, what have you been doing before this podcast?
My paper's getting all ripped up. This is a disaster. What an awful start.
How much have you got to clean up?
From Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. It's surely Liverpool's day now. Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular! Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal! Manchester City champions!
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host this week, Shane Lees, and joining me, I've got Harry Philby.
Hello.
And Anthony Kendrick.
Good evening.
Oh, wow, we've got a replacement for Hero. It's been a while since we've heard his voice, but that's close enough. But it doesn't quite stir me in the way he does, but we'll do. We're going to start off with the news. Everton of all clubs, have been handed a transfer ban. Not that kind of transfer ban. This is for academy players for breaching the Premier League recruitment rules. Now, what this is it's about they've been offering special inducements, incentives for a player to join and register with the club. And obviously, for getting young players into the team, you're not actually allowed to pay them in any meaningful way. You're still supposed to be encouraging them to be part of education. They've got to be in part of your catchment area, so you can't be trying to force them to move into your area just in order to get them. They've been handed a fairly hefty fine for this kind of level of thing. It's £500,000. It doesn't sound like a lot in the grand scheme of a football club, but it's quite a big amount for the academy's side of things. But I suppose it's quite surprising because Everton are not the kind of club you normally associate that with. They're normally the ones you think, oh, they've been quite good for, you know, giving academy chances and having one of those good setups. You don't really associate this with them, but I suppose it's proof, well, no one's really innocent of this kind of thing.
As far as I'm aware, Everton have got probably the best academy or one of the best in the country, and it's probably not just Everton doing this. I'm sure there's all sorts of shady deals going on at all the Premier League, not just Premier League, all the academies. And I just hope we see other clubs get bought, because it's hard to believe that Everton are the only club that have done this. I'm sure everyone else has.
Yeah, it's a shame because Everton are particularly good at bringing in English youngsters as well, like with Lookman, Calvert-Lewin and Tom Davies being the ones, like the recent ones. Tom Davies is English, isn't he? He's not Irish or something.
He is English.
Yeah, he is English. Yeah. So it's a shame because this applies exclusively to Premier League and Football League players, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They can't mm-hmm. buy players from other... So what they're likely to do is just now go and send all their scouts out to other European countries and bring all those players in. So it's actually pretty bad for English players. But obviously they pointed out that they've been making some pretty big mistakes. So I think it's fair. And you're right that we should probably need to be more strict on these things in the future, I think, with academies, because they are so important. We talk a lot about how English players aren't getting enough chances, and this is exactly why, really. So,
do Everton have any sort of partnerships or feeder clubs or anything like that? Because I know, like, United in the past have had Royal Antwerp and Chelsea with Vitesse. Could Everton get one of their... I don't know if they've got a similar arrangement with a European club. Could they get their sign players on their behalf, if you like, and try and circumvent the rules in that way?
I'm going to answer this to the best of my knowledge. I have no idea.
I've just Googled Everton feeder club and there isn't one that comes up naturally. So it doesn't look like they have like a club that they send all their loan players out to. Yeah, it's a shame. I would have thought it's one of those things that I prefer teams to do, because then at least teams get a minute. At least players get minutes, you know.
Well, in other news, Thierry Henry, as everyone knows, he took over as manager of Monaco. Everyone was pretty keen on it. Everyone was fairly thinking, oh, Thierry Henry's going to go off and become this amazing manager. Okay, it's very early days and Monaco have been pretty crap all year, but it's not... Well, let's just say even Mark Hughes gave a new manager bounce to Southampton. Didn't turn out pretty well, but we were good for at least one game, so that kind of worked out. He's not won a game yet. They're still looking pretty much as bad as they were before. Their discipline record has, if anything, got worse. I think in all the games he's managed, they've now managed to get 2 or 3 red cards. So that's not the best of signs. And yeah, they're definitely out of the Champions League now. They've kind of got humiliated quite recently by Club Bruges, of all teams to get humiliated by. It's Monaco, and it's not like it's a bad team either. So I think the whole thing of Henry is going to turn out to be this amazing manager. Again, I know it's early doors, but it doesn't really look like it's going to come true. And I tell you what, I'm not surprised. Is anyone else surprised?
No, not really. I think Monaco sort of failing at the moment is like Thierry's probably going to take a lot of stick just because they hasn't managed to turn them around yet, or even if he ever does. But the amount of squad turnover they've had in the last couple of years, like, they have signed a few players to replace them, but like, they lost Lamar, they lost Mbappe, they lost Fabinho, all of these kind of players. Just, they were so key to that team that that won the league couple of years ago. So to lose them all in the space of a couple of years, it's like Southampton basically selling all their players to Liverpool, except more extreme, and they're actually good. So
Monaco was still spending money. I mean, they're a better team. You look at that team, they're a better team than Dijon, they're a better team than Stade Reims, they're a better team than Club Brugge.
Oh yeah,
better team than Strasbourg. I think the idea, everyone thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, what's happening wrong with Monaco? It's clearly something between the manager and the players. It's not all gelling. You bring in someone like Henri and that will kind of fix that, because it'll be, they'll just get back to being confident and all those kinds of things. And none of that's really happening. And here's the thing I always thought he was a half-assed pundit. I'd never thought much of him as a pundit. He was just a French Alan Shearer. Says the really obvious stuff that anybody could say being a pundit, but says it in such a way that it sounds like it's intelligent. And it's not at all. It's just not
that's
even
a terrible. Slightly. That's a terrible French accent.
That was not even meant to be a French accent. That was just meant to be a mocking accent. I can see how it kind of went to be French there, but no. Yeah. No, I genuinely don't think he was ever that good of a pundit, even though that doesn't really mean anything. But he never seemed to have that intelligence. But obviously everyone was saying, oh, he's done the coaching at Belgium, and obviously that's really good because, well, Martinez kind of in that amazing, surely it's got to be something to do with the backroom staff too. I don't think there's been any really positive signs that he was going to turn out to be a great manager. And I think, as much as if you're a new manager coming into your first job, I think there needs to be a little bit of a confidence thing that suddenly happens. Like, at least even if it's a small turnaround where it's just getting that confidence back, because it's your first ever managerial job. Surely that's like the entire big push you've got there. And it's kind of exactly the same at Monaco. And I think, I think he's going to be turned out to be a bit of a Gary Neville.
I agree with you. I think we've got a big problem in this country, especially with hiring former players as managers. And just expecting them to be as good as they were back in their playing days, rather than getting them to take over, say, a League Two club and working their way up like it's expected of them in Europe. That's one problem for me. But as we say with Monaco, you look at the squad turnaround. I think a big loss for them was Moutinho, who went to Wolves. You talk about all the young players, but Moutinho's a terrific midfielder. But I did watch a bit of that game, and it's not like their squad is pathetic now. They've got Falcao still. They've got that Tielemans in midfield, who's a highly rated midfielder. Glick's a terrific centre back as well. So it's not like we're talking, and Benaglio as well, the goalkeeper. But it's not like we're talking about a joke Monaco team that's been ripped apart. Yes, there's been some transfers, but they're still a decent side. But yeah, for me, I think the key point is that managers going straight into Monaco's a big club, and he should have went to a smaller club first and managed there before going straight to Monaco.
I do agree. And the thing as well, you've got to remember that actually quite a lot of the big managers these days, they weren't great footballers. They were either very, very average footballers or they weren't footballers at all. Look at Mourinho as a really obvious one, of the most successful managers in the last two decades. Rafael Benitez, never a big manager. Sampaoli, he was another one. Avram Grant was another one. Villas Boas.
Maurizio Sarri wasn't even in football 20 years ago or whatever it was. He was a banker. So
there's this assumption that if they're in football, they must know all about it. But just because you are good at kicking a ball doesn't mean you're any good at thinking about it, because that is what a manager's job is. It's to think about the football and think about the players and the relationships and how you get the best out of that. Like, it's actually, when you start to think about it, there's so few of those really great players turned out to be really good managers. It's actually really rare.
Can I make a similar example? Gattuso at Milan, he was a terrific midfielder, really liked him as a player. But at Milan, he sort of got the job for his name, and he's not pulling up trees there, but it's just because he's got that sheer respect from the fans. Almost, you know, Henri or say Zidane at Real Madrid. I know Zidane actually turned out okay, but it's purely from admiration from the fans that they've got where they are and they're getting any time at all. And I think, I'd like to think, if I was a coach or something who's not played football, who's just worked my way up as a coach, I've spoke to a few in previous interviews. I'd be a bit peeved, actually. You know, you spend your years doing your badges, doing everything, and then someone gets the job based on no managerial or coaching experience.
They get there because of it's who they know and it's the reputation. But these other people have actually trained for this job. That's the key difference. I find it a bit of a strange one, just because it is so genuinely rare that you get the top managers. The best example of it is Glenn Hoddle. Everyone thought Glenn Hoddle was going to be an amazing manager because he was well-spoken. He was an amazing technical footballer, and everyone thought, oh, he's going to play this really good attacking football. And every single player who ever played under him hated him, absolutely despised him, and said he was a terrible manager. And that was probably the biggest example we have in this country of where it's just not worked out in any way, shape or form. The last few years of Premier League football, and you think of like the Premier League managers, how many of them were actually even notable footballers?
I think just talking about Henri again a bit, it says a lot about his tactics that he put Nasser Chadli in central midfield, which, you know, he's known for his lack of work rate, and you put him in the position that requires the most work.
I'd argue he did quite well as a wing back for Belgium at the World Cup. I don't know about work rate, but I think with the French accent impression and us slating him, I don't think we had an interview with Thierry Henry on this podcast, unfortunately.
You know, I think we were pretty safe with not having that interview anyway, but there we go. Right, moving on. In the last week or so, there's been more news yet again about the creation of a so-called European Super League. This is a locked-off division where the biggest clubs from the biggest countries in Europe go off and they play their football. They leave their national leagues behind, they go off and play each other many times a year and say, look, we're the best team in the world now at the end of it. Anybody who's ever listened to this podcast before with me on it knows I absolutely despise this entire concept and hope that everyone who comes up with this idea dies in a bus crash, without being overly harsh. I think if you're a fan of these clubs in any way, you should literally get an email, get a letter, send it to your chief executive. You can do that and say, what are you doing? Don't do this, you nitwit. It's been a recent leak by Der Spiegel. They've had a whole bunch of stuff going on at the moment. I think it's coming from the footballleagues.com website. Not that I'm plugging that by any means. What it's essentially said is that the teams have been actually meeting now. They've kind of put into a little bit of more formal an idea for creating a league in 2021, and it's basically going to be they're playing each other several times a year. The clubs are set, and there's going to be a few guest clubs, which they're going to decide whether or not they invite them, rather than a case of if they accomplish anything. Is anybody here vaguely in favour of it? And I do remember that I said die in a bus crash.
All right. Well, I can make one point in favour. One point I can see why some European clubs want this. And that's because if you look at the Champions League revenues compared to the Premier League and La Liga, teams like in Italy and Germany and such, they don't get anywhere near as much money from the Champions League as the Premier League gets. And TV figures for the Champions League are atrocious compared to that. And I can see why, from that point of view, why as a European club, I would want a reformat of the Champions League. Now, if this Euro Super League is to replace domestic football, then I am completely against it. But if it's some sort of system to replace the Champions League with a better, whether it's a full-on league system or something, I can just about get behind that, I think.
Yeah, it's. I will say this now, it's not to replace the Champions League. This is literally the clubs would break away. So Man United, for instance, would stop playing in the Premier League, but only play in this European Super League. That's what they essentially want. And it's a locked off thing. No relegation or anything like that. You're safe in here. For me, this is motivated purely by selfishness. Because you look at those other leagues that you mentioned, and I can understand that point where, you know, the money's in England, but it's not making its way out to these other countries. I can understand that criticism, but it's almost exclusively the case that those clubs have deliberately monopolised their leagues, prevented their leagues getting competitive by signing up and draining away any additional talent. So, I'm sorry, it's your own bloody fault that you've created an entirely uncompetitive league no one wants to pay to watch. And also, bad luck on not speaking English. genuinely, sorry, if you're Spain, bad luck that you didn't end up speaking English, because that is one of the biggest reasons why the Premier League is global, because it's English language. America, everyone in the world speaks English as a second language. Come on, that's, you're just bad luck at this point. Come on.
Yeah, well, I hate it as much as you do, to be perfectly honest. Like, I agree with pretty much everything you said, that I, like, maybe not hoping people die in a bus crash. That's a bit extreme. But, I think the more interesting question, rather than do people want it, because I genuinely haven't met a single person who wants this to happen. I really don't think there's anybody who wants this to happen other than the people who are trying to make it happen. The more interesting question is whether it actually will. I think if the top five teams, because it would be Man United, City, Chelsea, Liverpool and Arsenal from the Premier League, wouldn't it? They're all going in. There's no way that there wouldn't be riots if that was announced, that all five of those teams would leave the Premier League.
See, that's the thing you're saying, is that there aren't really many people in this country who are supporting it, and that's absolutely true. Like, I've not met a Man United fan who's in favour of this, who's thinking, oh yeah, I can't wait for us to leave the league we've had every single bit of our history in and go off and just go and play events every year. I've not heard a single fan who wants that. But you've got to remember, there's a modern generation of fan who isn't really tied in with the history, who's more following players than they're necessarily following teams. You know, like the Ronaldo fans, they'll change from Real Madrid to Juve because Ronaldo's gone to Juve. They're looking at those fans, they're looking at the fans who will generally stick with it because they are United fans or they're City fans or whatever. They're knowing that they're going to lose that base they've got in the UK. But hey, what about all those other fans in America who really want to see this? Or China? Or India? Or Brazil? What about all those other fans? They're looking at that as a revenue stream, because those fans, they don't really care about the Premier League as such. It's not the historicity of it. It's not the sense of community, the camaraderie that you get from a sport within a nation. They're looking at it as they buy into the brand football, the brand Man United, the brand Man City. So when they're looking at it, they just want to support the biggest, most successful team. Easiest way of doing that is if they're all playing each other every single year. So that's where they're looking at it and saying, why should we do this? Because we can generate the money from this. We'll get better support internationally if we're not playing Stoke, if we're not playing, you know, all these other clubs. Because these fans, these Americans, all about, they don't want to see those games. They want to see the big teams. They only want to see the big teams. But on the other hand, I also think that makes perfect sense from a business point of view. But it's also incredibly short-sighted, because the Premier League, as it is, could easily keep going in the same basic format for another 100 years. Proof in the pudding is it's already gone on for over 100 years. This, what they're doing, couldn't last 2 decades before it got just sheer boring.
Would fans get behind, say, Man United, who's finishing, you know, top of the league or competing for a title? Fans can get behind that, but would there be as many United fans if they're finishing 12th in the Euro Super League?
Well, that's again the other side of it, where they're being a bit short-sighted in this. But all of these clubs are going into this assuming, like, the ones who know they wouldn't possibly win this competition are going, yeah, but we're there by association, we're not winning our one anyway. And the ones who everyone else is thinking, oh yeah, we can win it. Yeah, we're good enough, we can win it. And so it's all going a little bit, I can see why they are thinking of this as a good idea. I can see it from a business point of view. I can even see it slightly from a football point of view. But it's so short-sighted. It's scarily short-sighted how they're looking at this. And the thing is as well, is it's not just short-sighted, because it would fucking ruin football. It would ruin football.
Yeah,
it's not
just short-sighted
for their clubs. It would destroy the league systems across Europe. It would completely.
There's a couple of really interesting things about this as well, because one of the main reasons that it might be attractive to clubs and actually players as well is because it would operate outside FIFA's regulations as well. So there's definitely a lot of dodgy stuff that they could get going on with there. But on that side, FIFA could also introduce some sort of rule that if you've played in the European Super League, you have a ban from joining any other league or whatever it would be for a certain period of time and all this time as well, or banning players from international tournaments and things like that.
Gianni Infantino has come out and said any player who played in a European Super League would be banned from playing in the World Cup.
Exactly. So there again, you already
fair
have
enough.
Like
FIFA for
throats.
Once. But, FIFA for once coming through.
Yeah, but the only other thing that I could maybe understand, although I still think this is stupid, I wouldn't do it, is maybe you could have this in conjunction with your Premier League team or whatever. So Man United could essentially have two teams, one of them competing in the Super League and one of them competing in the Premier League. It's a stupid idea, but that's the only way I would limp my way.
Wouldn't the obvious solution to that be expand squad registration for Champions League? Sign players and tell them you're not playing in a league, you're playing in the Champions League.
Yeah.
This league is just a smaller Champions League. So wouldn't a simple thing be to reduce the size of the Champions League? Cut out all of the fourth and third place finishes and just say, right, it's actually a genuine Champions League again.
This is the problem. The Champions League is a poor tournament in my eyes, and I can see why it happened. I still think if you made a proper 16-team league tournament of some sort, you know, everyone plays each other once, I'm sure you could make a better Champions League. And I think
that's where I think this is so short-sighted, because there are so many obvious and easy solutions to this.
But no, is this political? Are they threatening to do it in order to force UEFA's hand to produce the Champions League, which is better and gets better revenues and better viewing figures, and you know the clubs do better out of it?
I would say that the clubs would have to blink first, because if they had to actually face the reality of turning around and going, right, no, we're actually leaving the league, they called our bluff and said, go on, off you go then. I think many of those clubs like the idea of it, and they're thinking, oh, this would be a really good thing. And when it came to actually pulling the trigger, I think most of them would realise just how much damage this would cause, and that this wouldn't be some progressive good thing for the game. This would just be damaging. As I said, for me, it's completely selfish. It's against the entire concept of competition, which is what this is. This is a sport, not a business. If you're saying, right, these clubs are now safe forever and just playing each other because they're the best and the richest clubs in the world, and none of you are invited. Congratulations.
How exciting would the Premier League be if you took out the top six? It'd be mental. Like Southampton could even win the title one year, or Brighton, or someone.
But it wouldn't be the Premier League anymore. It wouldn't be the Premier League.
English football would be mental. It'd be brilliant to watch. It'd be like the Championship. It would actually be amazing to watch, I think.
I'd like that as long as these clubs just got dissolved.
Top six went and it was Leicester, West Ham, I don't know, Southampton, Brighton, whoever competing for the title. It'd be amazing.
I didn't want to get promoted to the Premier League to compete for the title with West Ham. I wanted to get promoted to the Premier League to be playing Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, all of these teams. If they were gone, I get your point that it would make it really competitive and really exciting, but I don't know, man. I just think it would monopolize football to a point where it would just spoil it. Every domestic league in the world would get ruined. And that European Super League probably wouldn't even be that good to watch, because it would just be tight games every week.
And Harry, don't worry about Brighton competing with West Ham to win the title. They did the 1,000-year football manager sim, and I don't think Brighton won it once. So I think you're pretty safe.
How did Southampton do? Relegated 1,000 times.
Oh, we won it a couple of times, and we were generally relegated quite a lot. But that's predictable now. Come on. All right. The other big thing that came out of these football leaks is the allegations about Man City and Paris Saint-Germain that they've been skirting the rules around financial fair play. I'm going to walk you quickly through it in case any of our listeners don't know exactly what's been going on here. Basically, the accusations are that Man City has owners have been essentially pumping money into their sponsors for their sponsors to go and put that money back into the club. So it looks like incoming revenue, you can spend that on the club rather than money coming from the chairman so that you can invest. You can't spend that money on things like transfers and wages. You can only use that to invest in your club. And you still have to make that money back in profits. So they've been inflating the value of their sponsorships. In addition to that, what they've also been doing is they have been paying their players less wages, but setting up a shell company to pay for these players' images rights. So basically they're paying them by other means, which also, by the way, has some real serious tax implications because of the way these payments are very different to a weekly or monthly salary. What's essentially come out from this is that UEFA and FIFA kind of already knew about this sort of thing going on anyway. In fact, they did previously punish Man City, and I think they did punish Paris Saint-Germain as well for this sort of thing. It was an absolute pussy foot wrist slap. It was pathetic, and they basically wiped out half of the fine they had to pay in the first place. What they're saying now is essentially what these clubs have done is so much worse than what they were originally accused of. So it's a case of, can they get a reinvestigation into this and more serious things done? Now, it probably wouldn't be the case that they turned around and kicked them out of the Champions League this year, for instance. But a ban next year, that could be very possible. Or even more serious things like a several-year ban, because it's how flagrant the violations are here. Especially, you've also got to consider Premier League might want to get involved in this. They might want to turn around and say, hang on a second, these rules apply to all of our Premier League clubs and you've been doing that unfairly here. What can we do to punish you in the Premier League? So there is all sorts of things. Also, it could come to nothing. You could say, oh, we already knew you were doing this. We already punished you once. This isn't anything new. So we're going to find out who has balls very soon by how they react to this. But I don't know, does this put a real negative spin on everything City's been doing, or is this just something we knew they were doing anyway? And, all right, sure, why not?
Yeah, the big clubs, you know, that have this like stupid amount of money, there's no way that they're clean. You know, it's that's the one of the weird things, though, about financial fair play is because when it came in, everyone thought that it was basically introduced to make things fairer between the teams. And it was never really about that. It was mainly in response to teams going into administration because of poor management, like Portsmouth, essentially, and ruining their entire club for the fans, essentially. Yeah. And it hasn't happened as often, at least in the last few years. There hasn't noticeably been any teams that have completely fallen apart for reasons other than just being rubbish, like Sunderland or something.
Yeah, or
like that.
terrible ownership, really.
Yeah, like Mike Ashley. But what none of them are doing is different now than it would have been without financial fair play. They're just rubbish. Like it's weird. It feels like the financial fair play thing has stopped that, but it was never designed to stop the overspending on players in the first place. Teams were always going to find a way to do it, and if anything, it's gotten bigger.
It was almost that they just named it the wrong thing.
Yeah.
They called it financial fair play, which implies that, you know, every club's got a fair chance financially. But it was more just, let's not have any more clubs get liquidated like Rangers, because that was kind of a disaster, guys.
Yeah.
Let's not repeat this.
The only club I can think of which have completely, nearly folded was Leyton Orient. But yeah, other than that, not a lot. I think the problem is there's a vested interest for UEFA to have the best teams in Europe, and therefore I think it's hard for them to exclude Manchester City and PSG from the from it. But it almost links back to the Euro Super League. I mean, there might not be financial fair play there, so, you know, pay them what we like. But the main thing I do want to say is that it's not just with these rules that players have been paid through shell companies to exploit financial fair play. It's been done for years as tax evasion. I know some United players would certainly, in sort of about 10, 12 years ago, being paid through through image rights, etc., through shell companies in Gibraltar. Jersey, I think it was. So, yeah. It's been up for a long time. It's just
with this one in particular, because they have internal emails and all that kind of thing, which Der Spiegel says they got legally. I think Der Spiegel got it legally. Whoever got that information in the first place maybe didn't. What the difference is now is they're saying this was done deliberately to keep the wages lower, to keep them in line with financial fair play, rather than for these players or these clubs in general to just be able to sort of flout tax laws. This was done specifically to dodge what UEFA were trying to put in place, which is it's a case of maybe beforehand they could have said, oh, maybe they weren't doing this for this reason. Maybe they were just doing things a little bit differently. And okay, it was not quite against the rules, but we can sort of put a little bit of a fine on you and say, try and not do it again. This time they're saying, no, they actually had discussions. How can we get away with not playing by the rules?
HMRC have got more powers now to look at people who might be avoiding taxes or doing dodgy things. There was the woman who spent millions in Harrods. It's aside from football. But things like that, with HMRC having more powers, I do think it's only a matter of time. I think next year we might hear about a club doing some significant, or a player doing significant tax evasion and getting done.
But you know what, the thing I find funny about the various very wealthy people who try and dodge taxes, they forget a little thing about the HMRC. And I know we're talking off football here, but if the tax laws change, the loophole you've been exploiting to not pay your taxes, if that changes, they can claim back about 8 years worth of taxes. They can apply the last 8 years of what you've been doing by the new tax laws. So you're buggered anyway you do it, especially if you're the only way you get away with it is if you're a massive company who are based in the Caymans. That's the only way you really get away with this. Because if you're someone like Rooney and they turn around and go, oh, we figured out Rooney's dodging taxes, they can just go, right, we just changed the law and then we get it all back.
Do you know who was arrested at the start of the year on suspicion of tax fraud?
Not Jimmy Carr.
Glenn Murray. Yeah, mate. Nothing's really come of it since. So he probably just went, yeah, I'll pay my tax. And then it moved on. But, you know, what a bloke. Yeah,
in those situations, you'd either go, I've been completely caught, or, yeah. Oh, no, I genuinely was making a mistake. I had no idea this was tax evasion.
Yeah, the toriest of crimes.
No, I don't think this makes City look good, but I have a feeling this one will, unlike previous accusations of this happening, I think this one's going to end up being a lot more serious. I think UEFA are going to get pressured a lot into, you know, putting the foot down on this one. The only issue they'll have is legal challenges from the likes of PSG and Man City, who obviously have got pretty deep pockets for that kind of thing. But as I said, we'll see who's got some balls. I hope UEFA actually do have some balls on this one. Yeah. We put up a poll, yes, and we hope all of you listeners voted in that poll. And it will tell us that most of you listeners are Man United fans. The poll was, which English side are most likely to win the Champions League? Anthony?
Yeah, as you say, Shane, most people think that Man United will win the Champions League. 45% at the time of issue, the poll's still open, so it might change. 39 said City, who are the bookmakers' favourites to win the Champions League, only get 39% of our vote. 16 Liverpool and 0 for Spurs. Yeah, so
0%.
0%.
There's not even a few Spurs fans.
We've not got Spurs fans listening.
We have slated Spurs sometime on this podcast. Maybe they've just switched off.
Yeah. Wow, 0%. That's worse.
I'm surprised nobody voted for Arsenal.
Yeah. You can only put posts in a Twitter poll, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm astonished people think United. It was a very good win against Juve the other night. But yeah, I can't see how anyone in their right mind thinks United are going to win the Champions League. I mean, we're not going to get top four, let alone that.
Yeah, I think the only team that realistically has a chance of doing it is City. And even there, they sort of have just a habit of completely failing in Europe for no reason whatsoever.
City are favourites to win it, though, with most bookies. I was looking at it earlier today. I think they're 9-2 or something. They're favourites. Barcelona are just behind. Real and Bayern are miles away at the minute in their quality.
I can definitely see a Barcelona-Man City final, and that would be sick. I'd love that. That would be such a good final.
It would be amazing when Gerard Pique scores a hat-trick. And just signs off. He just pulls off his shirt and has a United shirt underneath. He never forgot.
I saw Gerard Pique at my first game at Old Trafford. First game I went to watch there against Burton Albion.
Yeah, what a man. Always someone I tried to sign on Football Manager back when he was at United, and they always transfer listed him.
My dad saw David Beckham's Football League debut, Preston v Brighton.
Whoa.
That's a good one. Yeah, I know, mate. Yeah, Shane, you can pretend to be more excited if you want.
My brother's sister's auntie's cousin's boy. Well, he went and gone and saw Paddy McGuinness go and play football for England XI. anyway.
That was much better than your French accent.
Thank you. I don't even know what that accent was. Right. Manchester Derby's coming up. Yeah. What do we reckon is going to happen there? I mean, I think we know what our listeners think is going to happen there. But what do we think is going to happen?
I can't see anything other than a City win. I mean, I don't know. I watched the All or Nothing documentary. I watched one episode, and that was the Manchester Derby episode, just to try and get me in the spirit for the weekend, and it hasn't. I think City are going to win like 4-1 or something. The one thing I would say is I hope Alexis Sanchez and Juan Mata start for United. I think those two are crucial. We shouldn't be playing Lukaku.
I can understand Mata. I'm surprised by Sanchez.
Been rubbish this season.
Yeah. Mata, I think, I'm on board with that, fine. But yeah, Sanchez, really?
I would play Sanchez up front because of his work rate and his general energy. I think he's crucial. And it's a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I think Martial and Rashford are both better as wide men rather than in the centre. I would play Sanchez up front, Martial and Rashford either side.
I reckon Fellaini's going to play. I got a feeling. It's Mourinho, guys. Remember, he does stuff like this, and then it just works, and you can't ever explain it.
I don't know.
I can see a draw out of this game. But obviously, City are comfortably favourites, but I can see United surprising some people because they haven't.
And you've got to remember, it's at the Etihad, and that's not a home game for Man City. They've got eight fans there.
Hey, I went there last year and they packed it out for Yaya Toure's last game. It was great. One of the best atmospheres I've ever been to. It genuinely was. Like, give them credit for that. It was genuinely one of the best games I've ever been to, even though we got battered. But
I got to say, we were actually genuinely singing Fellaini's praises before we actually started recording.
I love Fellaini.
I think we all actually really quite like Fellaini. Yeah. Listeners probably don't like Fellaini. Actually, tell you, there's a lot of United fans who listen, so maybe you guys do like
Fellaini. There's the poll for week. Do you like Fellaini?
Do you like Fellaini?
Just do you like Fellaini?
Oh, he's so underrated. I would kill to have him at Southampton. No one can do what he does. He's amazing for it. Anyway, yeah. Fellaini to win against Manchester City.
Yeah.
Fellaini single-handedly.
1-0 Fellaini set up by Mata. David Moyes sprints onto the pitch celebrating.
What are the odds on Fellaini to outscore Manchester City in that game?
Very low, but I'm betting on it, boys.
To our new segment, betting tips.
Yeah.
Don't listen to us, seriously. Anyway, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about England. Yes, we're back to England again. More international friendlies that we all love. Plus a Nations League game. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the England squad that's been picked. I'm just going to quickly go through it now for you listeners. For goalkeepers, we've got Marcus Bettinelli, Jack Butland, Alex McCarthy and Jordan Pickford. We all know who's going to be playing out of M4. Defence, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Ben Chilwell, Lewis Dunk,
Joe Gomez,
Michael Keane, Luke Shaw, John Stones, Kieran Trippier and Kyle Walker. Midfielders, we've got Dele Alli, Ross Barkley, Fabian Delph, Eric Dier, Jordan Henderson, Jesse Lingard, Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Harry Winks. And for strikers, we've got Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, Wayne Rooney, only for the USA game, Jadon Sancho, Raheem Sterling, Danny Welbeck, who has just gotten injured, I believe, in the Arsenal game, so probably not going to be included, and Callum Wilson. So we've got big call-ups there, I would say, for Callum Wilson, obviously his first time in there. Jadon Sancho in there for the second time in a row. That's him showing he can really have some staying power, and he's doing outstandingly.
Shane, say Lewis Dunk next.
Lewis
Dunk is in again, which, no, to be fair, that does deserve credit, because we have got a couple of decent enough centre-backs. I don't know why Michael Keane's in there. I can't really explain that one.
Smalling doesn't make it ahead of Michael Keane. I know I said it last time. I think Chris Smalling has been really good for United, and I think he's probably the best out and out defender for England. I know he's terrible on the ball, but I think as an out and out defender, he's the guy, and I can't understand how Michael Keane's been picked over him.
To be fair, he's been good for United this season.
We have a friend, me and Shane have a friend who's an Everton fan. I was actually chatting to him the other day and he said Michael Keane's been really good so far. I literally have no idea because I have no interest in watching Everton for some reason. But I haven't seen, but you'd have thought he must be doing something. But I like the squad.
Southgate's watched more Everton games than we have.
that's true. I like the squad though. I'm glad Callum Wilson got called up because he has been absolutely on fire The main problem in his career has been injuries. He's never really, like, his goal scoring record in the Premier League is actually astonishing. It's actually like unbelievably impressive, but it's just because he's been injured every time. And you've just got to hope it's not because of Bournemouth's maniac football that he manages to get these goals and that he's got some capability of playing in like a more controlling team. That's what we worry about him.
Do you have two players I'm delighted have been called up?
Mm-hmm.
Luke Shaw and Ben Chilwell.
Yeah,
it's not Danny Rose holding back Ryan Bertrand again for no reason whatsoever. At least these two are kind of playing well at the moment.
Yeah, I actually love Ben Chilwell. I think he's so powerful.
Good.
Mate, he's crazy. And he also, like, he just seems like a lovely bloke. I know that's not a reason to like a footballer, but every interview he does, he says all the right stuff. And he's all in there. But yeah, he looks absolutely amazing. I've watched him a couple of times for Leicester and obviously during the England games, and he looks amazing. He's so solid and dependable. Big fan.
Just to contrast that, do you think Fellaini's a likeable bloke? Because I imagine he's an absolute twat. I don't know.
I don't know. Every single manager who ever has him in his changing room seems to want him at their club. So somewhere along the way, he must actually be quite a nice guy.
Sorry, I got a bit sidetracked there.
We've come full circle now.
The one I'm very happy about is Jadon Sancho, because it's so easy to forget about what these players are doing abroad. and he is playing very, very well, he could have a very big future. And it's one of the few times I look at a player like that and think he'd have a massive future and never come back to the Premier League. And yeah. I wouldn't mind that one bit.
I get that James Maddison hasn't been as good for Leicester in the recent block of games compared to before, but I still think he deserves a chance with England. He deserved to be called up. I'm a bit disappointed about him not being there, to be honest.
Over Fabian Delph, anyway.
Yeah, wasn't that partially motivated by Dele coming back in as well, because he was injured, wasn't he?
And
Jesse Lingard, yeah, that's true. Jesse Lingard's barely played, though. That's the weird part.
It was his first game back. Well, he played 2 minutes at the weekend, last weekend against, was it Bournemouth?
So he's banging form.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He played 2 minutes for them. He didn't really do anything special against Juve the other day, and that's it. So yeah, maybe. how he can justify it on recent form, but yeah, I don't know.
I think it's very, very clear that Southgate's got his boys, and the thing about having that is it's perfectly fine when it's going well. Second half starts going wrong, that's where every single previous manager has fallen over for England before. When the fans and the media are screaming, change your players, and they're just not. So you can keep doing that as long as he's got the good faith with him. When it's not going that way, he needs to know when to change it up, Southgate. But you never know, it might all turn out all right.
Out of interest,
between being injured and being out of form, it's not like he's been playing and playing badly. It's just that he's been injured. So I think it's two different things.
Out of interest, as we've just talked about Danny Welbeck getting injured, who do we think would come in to replace him?
I hope Maddison comes in. I know it's not
actually. He was worth a shout for a direct forward replacement. Danny Ings.
Yeah.
I know as a Southampton fan, I'm saying it, but one, look at his goal scoring record this season. And two, consider that he's playing in a genuinely awful team who have got no service going forward to him at all. A player who's still scoring goals when nobody passes forward is pretty amazing, actually. And we don't have that many players like him.
I'm just going to point out that Glenn Murray is joint top scoring Englishman.
Yeah, and he's also 78 years old.
He might be that, but he's also scored 6 goals. So I'm kidding, obviously, but Daniel Sturridge is a decent shout. I don't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing Sturridge back in there.
Yeah, the last call-up, the last
internationals, I've said Sturridge definitely deserves to be there. This one, I mean, he was shocking in midweek for Liverpool. So now I'm not so sure. But if it were the previous lot, I was arguing he should have been in there, but perhaps not now.
I was just looking through the top scorers list for inspiration this year, and it's only just dawned on me how many incredible seasons there are going on at the moment. Like, there are so many players scoring ridiculous amounts of goals this year. Aguero and Hazard have 11 goal contributions between them, and then the lowest scoring player on this list has like 4 goals. That's insane. Sorry, bit of a diversion.
We've danced around the elephant in the room a little bit.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Now, I believe we do have another poll. Yes, we're on form this week with polls. But we have another poll about whether or not Wayne Rooney should be in the England squad for... It's kind of like a not testimonial friendly thing. It's a genuine international friendly with the USA, but it's raising money for Rooney's charity. Anthony, tell us about the poll.
Yeah, I can do. So we asked the question about whether Rooney deserves an England recall or not, and it was closer than the Brexit referendum. 51%.
Wow.
51% thinks that Rooney deserves to play for England one last time, and 49 say no. So it's absolutely nothing in it.
And you know what, listeners, I don't often agree with you. I completely agree with you on that. I am totally on the fence too, because I think it's, for me, this all that matters here is how this came about. If Rooney got in contact with England and said, this game, we're raising money for my charity, obviously, and I'd like to be able to play a part in it, I think he has no right to even have that conversation, should not be given a cap. If England, on the other hand, said, Rooney, we want to raise money for your charity. You've been a really good performer for England over the years, a really good ambassador for England. We want to raise money, and we think it might be a good idea if you come on even just as a sub for a bit. And he goes, yeah, okay. That, for me, is fine, because England have asked him, and he said yes. If it's the other way around, he has absolutely no right. Once you retire, and you retire yourself, not retired by your country, you're out. That's it. Done. So for me, it all depends how this came about, and we don't know how it came about, so I'm on the fence.
Apparently, Southgate has come out and said that he definitely won't start.
Yeah, Harry Kane said that Southgate mentioned it to some of the players, and it was Southgate's idea to invite Rooney back.
I think we'll never really know the truth of it, because they know he turned around and said Rooney asked for this, everyone would just be like, no, he has no right, he retired himself. Yeah. It'd be like, England can ask Milner to come out of retirement, Milner can't ask now to play for England. Because he said, I'm retired. That's how it works.
I'm with you as well, where I'm like really on the fence, but I'm just slightly leaning over towards the I'm okay with it and quite happy with it side, because we've talked a few times in the last couple of weeks about like how Rooney retired from international football, and because we were talking about it because when Vardy did as well, and Gary Cahill, and Rooney sort of went out on a little bit of a negative tone, and actually he deserves more credit than anyone else, really. He like, people forget how, I think, because of the last few years that he had, where, you know, it was question marks over how he was playing, where his position was, all this kind of stuff, that how important he was to United in those years and how good for England he was. He's, you know, he's the top scoring Englishman of all time. I think I'm in it in that regard, that I think it is respectful for him. But you're right, if he went over and went, oh, I want to play for England one more time, then it'd be like, yeah, maybe not. But it sounds like like you said, it was Southgate's idea, so I'm in favour of it. I think it's quite nice.
Wouldn't it have been a better idea just to have this as a proper exhibition match?
Maybe.
If it's for charity, rather than... Because this is... I know it's a friendly, and people go, oh, it's only a friendly. It's not like it's a club friendly, where really no one actually gives a damn what happens at all. This is an international friendly. They count for everything. All the other players on that pitch getting a cap as well. It's worth noting that these records can be kept for 100 years. We can still find out what happened when England played Scotland the very first time. So it still has significance in that way. Wouldn't it be better, especially if it's like raising money for Rooney's charity and all of that, like, to have done it like a proper testimonial style?
Maybe,
where
yeah.
It can be a bit of it's a celebration of Rooney's career for England. The fans would still turn out for that, because as much as the fans have been goading for him to leave the England team, I was there when England scored, when he scored that record-breaking goal. The fans, when they go to the stadium, they love Wayne Rooney. So they wouldn't have not backed him in those moments. They wouldn't have not backed him for a testimonial, and the American fans wouldn't have not backed him. So that could have still happened and raised money. As I said, for me, I'm on the fence, because I'm fine if it's a case of England have requested this, but I feel like there was a better way to do this exact thing,
and
proper exhibition style.
I also think it's probably a little bit harsh on like somebody like Callum Wilson, knowing that you might not get subbed on because Wayne Rooney's probably going to get subbed on instead of you. I feel like that's actually probably one of the bigger negatives about it is...
That's
Lewis
the point.
Dunk.
Everyone else is getting a cap as well.
But yeah, exactly.
It's supposed to have the same value.
Yeah, Wilson might get denied his first England cap just because Wayne Rooney is coming for, basically, to just show off a bit, is essentially what it's all about. But, it's not too bad, even if it was, like, a bit fluffy. It's not...
I'm quite happy for it.
Yeah, I think so.
He's one who, you know, he got a lot of criticism from the press and all that, but he was someone who never pulled out of a game, whether it was a friendly or a competitive match. He gave everything for England and really, you know, tried. It wasn't like he was one of them players who flaked away at friendlies and couldn't be asked. You know, it's not like he was Ryan Giggs or someone. I think he deserves a hell of a lot more credit. I mean, he single-handedly, like, I know we didn't achieve much, but Rooney almost single-handedly drove the England team for a long time, and he deserves a hell of a lot more credit than what he gets from me. I mean, I don't know if anyone's watched him. I know it's a completely different kettle of fish, and you can say it's a shit league and whatever, but I don't know if anyone's watched him in the US, but he's actually, from what I've seen anyway, he's actually played really well. And
yeah, he's tearing it up.
In a similar sort of way, he's driven that team, and I just think, as a player, he's sort of the guy. I mean, you say it about other players, whatever, we look up to so-and-so, but he's that guy in the changing room who I think makes such a difference.
Yeah, well, and I actually was going to bring up his little stint in the MLS, because I think it's actually, like, really nice for him. That's the only time I've ever seen somebody going to the MLS at the end of the career actually, like, work for their reputation in a way, because it's sort of gone. He's playing as a striker. All the fans love him. He's a known, like, he's a legend.
Yeah, he's not gone
and
to
he's
retire.
Genuinely,
he's still competing.
And he's genuinely been great. Like, it's nice for him to have that, rather than spending the last couple of years at United where all of the fans, maybe not United fans, actually, I think they were quite nice to him, but everyone else was on his back the whole time.
Yeah, it's not so much a last retirement payday so much as it's an actual proper swan song.
Yeah,
going over, like, the greatest moments over again. But I'd say it's clear that there's arguments both sides on this, and it's been a very, very close vote. What we obviously need is a people's vote to decide should be in this.
Oh,
anyway, let's not do that in any way. Right, well, I tell you what, before we sign off, I just want to pass over to Anthony very quickly, because obviously you've been doing a number of other shows, interviews, different kinds of things. Let us know quickly about what you've been doing.
Yeah, so I appeared on some good friends of ours, Shoot the Defence. They're another podcast sort of similar size to ourselves, so I appeared in an episode of that to plug our podcast quite shamelessly and spoke about the championship and various other things. Last interview I did was with Peter Prickett, who's a coach we've had on the show many times. I know he did the coaching show with Chris Lappin. He's released a book about 3v3 football and why that's the best way to train your players. Really good interview, actually. Yeah, really enjoyed doing that. And yeah, there's a few interviews I've got planned. So yeah, that's what I've been up to lately. And also, I also contribute to the Formula One podcast, if anyone's that way inclined. Lewis Hamilton's obviously world champion. I'm sure that'll appeal to about two listeners. But yeah.
If we got any Man United and F1 fans, they're going to love V2 and what we're putting out there. Also, please check out the wrestling podcast as well we've got going on V2. Check out all of our other stuff. We've got plenty more stuff coming up. Thank you very much for joining us this week, and we will see you guys soon. Good night.